May 28th, 2014. This is Carpool Conversations After Much Hemming and Hawing. I'm Mark.
And I'm Jim.
And we are finally on the way home on a brand new, well-paved I-70. Our tax dollars at work, right?
Thank goodness. I don't know what I would have done without the new pavement.
Well, yeah, because the old pavement was flat and smooth.
And black.
And I didn't see anything major wrong with it.
Got to spend the money somewhere.
Yeah, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. They do get a toll for this every time, so I guess throwing new pavement on there every so often is good. I'm reading in the Federalist about, we talk about how Republicans want Obamacare. What they're talking about is get rid of it, right?
Yeah.
So what are we going to do? We're going to put in new, we want insurance to be able to cross state lines. That's their big deal, right?
We are not going to gut this law. We will fix what needs to be fixed, but we're going to make the Affordable Care Act work, and those who say they are opposed to it and can't offer a solution, we'll push back.
President Obama, so what about solutions? We're back with the panel. Okay, Tucker. What happens? What do you do?
Well, the first thing you do is a philosophical point. You acknowledge that all progress is incremental, that comprehensive solutions to anything never work. Obamacare was never going to work simply because of its size, its scope, its ambition was just grotesque. So you repeal Obamacare and you fix health care piecemeal. A lot of things you can do. You can allow the sale of health care plans across state lines. Thanks to lobbyists, that's now illegal, so the states have a captive audience. And it limits competition and drives prices up.
Let insurance companies sell all kinds of policies in all states. Let it compete for your business.
We need to allow insurance companies to sell their products across state lines so there's more competition.
Cross-state line purchasing of health insurance allows health plans to be portable, to move with an individual from job to job and state to state, and gives Americans a wider range of plans from which to choose the one that suits them and their families best. Why shouldn't I be able to shop among different states and buy the policy that is at the best price for me and is the best tailored to my health needs and my situation?
Selling insurance across state lines, which I think additional competition would drive down premiums.
If you were to start over again, what personally would you like to see change in our healthcare system?
Yeah. Well, obviously, not have an individual mandate. I think it's a violation of the Constitution for the federal government to tell you you have to buy something. Because if you go down that road after 225 years, where do you stop? Then things that aren't included that ought to be included would be medical malpractice reform to save the 10% of the money that's wasted on health care because doctors give you tests you don't need. Secondly, to make sure that we can sell insurance across state lines to have more competition among insurance and drive down premiums, which the present bill is not doing. It's driving premiums up.
What is very important is that we have the kind of competition and choice that will help consumers. In many states in this country, there's one insurer that dominates the entire market. In Alabama, one insurer dominates 87%. In North Dakota, there's one insurer that dominates the market almost completely.
So why not break down the state barriers and let all of these insurance companies compete nationally without having to simply focus in on a state-by-state basis?
Why not let insurance companies sell across state lines? Molly Hindenburg following this for us in D.C. Molly, Republicans want this to be possible. Why are they in favor of insurance companies being able to sell outside their respective states?
Hi, Trace. They argue that competition and choice will drive down costs. They also contend that this idea would allow you to find a plan that meets your particular needs. Listen to this.
Or don't want them. Many policies mandate, or many states mandate, you must cover hair replacement. Well, what if you're already bald? Why do you want to pay for a policy that covers hair replacement? And the list goes on and on, all the way down to and including in some states, aromatherapy and other more esoteric things. Now, I'm not saying those aren't good services, but each time you mandate an additional benefit, the cost of the policy goes up.
Mm-hmm. And what their point was, and I found this really interesting, is that it's not about insurance competing. Insurance is going to compete no matter what. It kind of competes within state lines. I mean, we could get Blue Cross Blue Shield. We could get various ones within Kansas, depending on which one. But they all operate within Kansas. but they're competing on price, they're competing on that sort of thing. But by selling it across state lines, what he's talking about is competing in terms of taxes and regulations. So, you know, if you have one state that mandates, say, maternity care for single men, you know, that price is going to be more expensive. And the prices and the way, you know, the services and the things that you're going to get from these different insurance companies, depending on which state it is going to change. So what will happen? Well, insurance companies will start migrating the states that it makes it easier.
Makes sense. I mean, that's how a free economy and
right.
That's how it works.
Now, if they want to sell in a particular state, they may have to mandate certain things, but that's where the you know, economics of volume will take, you know, selling things bulk, being able to spread the cost across 50 states will help. Certainly, people do business in California, which has all kinds of crazy ass laws, as you can imagine.
They're willing to put up with the extra cost to do business there for whatever reason.
Right.
Probably, like you said, volume.
But if you could sell in 50 other states,
yeah,
the economies of scale mm-hmm. help bring that cost back down. So I'm stammering like crazy here. I don't know why.
I understand what you're saying.
Yeah. So I put it up on the blog, and if you guys get a chance to look at it, it's well worth your time. But, and a little bit of housekeeping here. We are now conservativeyoda.com. Not conservativeyoda.blogspot.com, although that will work. But we're all clean and shiny, and I'm going to put you on the spot and say that Mr. Web Developer here is going to make it look more awesome.
Of course.
Now I've done it in front of millions of people, or tens of people. So,
or 10 of people.
10 of people. Which is probably you and me listening to it in the car after we get that.
Four or five times.
That's okay. Nobody's listening. Who gives a shit? So, anyway, this is something I think that getting back to the healthcare thing. It's something I think that liberals just do not understand about economies of scale. And what I hear is, well, if they go to another state, then they lose the taxes in that state. Let's say New Yorkers buy from South Dakota, then South Dakota gets to reap the taxes. And there's kind of an underlying theme to this, like, well, states need to have their taxes. They're owed their taxes. And that's where I think it goes off the rails, because it's like, no, you know, if it's really about revenue, and I spoke about this before, if it's totally about revenue, then you lower the taxes, and economies of scale, volume, people coming that will overcome any rate reductions that you will have. By far, Reagan proved this back in the 80s. Kennedy proved this back in the 60s. When you get economic activity, the exponential growth that you get out of it streams, you know, money into the coffers far better than just raising the rates and taking from people.
Right. We've touched on that subject in a variety of ways. The basic principle being, when you remove barriers, you move faster.
Exactly. So what are we going to have to do to get this through, you know, guys like Krugman's head? Well, you're never going to get it through Krugman's head, but you get what I'm talking about. I mean, how do these guys manage to have a job at the New York Times and wherever they're at and not know these basic economic facts?
Well, it almost makes me wonder what's the motivation of someone who takes that stance. It seems to cut across a variety of principles. You mentioned, you contrasted the states and how different states handle the idea of insurance differently, and they have their own rules, and they have their own guidelines, and they do that in a variety of ways, and for a variety of topics and subjects, not just healthcare or insurance. States, fundamentally, states have had the leeway to kind of set up the basic framework for how they're going to work. From the beginning of the Constitution, the idea was we are a collection of states. Yeah, it's great that we all work under the same umbrella of a framework.
The Constitution.
The Constitution. But now we find ourselves in a world where the federal government, and more importantly, folks within the federal government, would like to see the federal government be the de facto mechanism for which we live our lives. And the idea that we have individual states, and each state, and even individual communities within those states, have their own idea of, hey, this is kind of how we like to do things in our community.
Do you see people, the state is there, you have a collection of people who decide to live in a state. They vote in whoever they want to act to their best interests to provide shared services like roads, like, police, fire, marshals, law enforcement, and a few other things.
Yeah.
You could do privately, but maybe not the best idea, but a minimal amount.
Yeah.
Right? So, taxes, let me read you what he writes here, and I think it's kind of interesting. Let me give you a little background on this. We have two guys here for the Federalist, a guy named Clancy, Dean Clancy, and the other one, the guy who's rebutting him, and let me bring it up here. I apologize. I'm never ready.
Just edit that pause out.
No, screw that. We're going to keep all the idiocy right here. Okay, Dan McLaughlin.
Oh.
And he responds to Dean Clancy. And what he says is that Clancy is saying that he doesn't think that allowing health insurance policies to be sold across state lines is not, first of all, the law does not really permit, and that interstate sales of health insurance will not instantly cure all that ails our health insurance. But I don't think anybody is, and what McLaughlin is saying, look, I don't think that anybody is saying that there's a silver bullet to cure everything. But this is a very big first step. So, Clancy, the guy who's kind of against it, he argues that what Republicans really want is not so much competition among insurers, but competition among regulatory regimes. Undoubtedly, more insurers would already offer a wider array of policy options, and not for government mandates requiring, say, mandatory maternity services for single men. He also notes that such competition is mostly unnecessary in the life and auto insurance markets because states don't regulate those policies as heavily and just let people transfer their policies from the prior state of residence. So they both kind of agree on that part.
Mm-hmm.
Where they disagree is on the taxes. Now McLaughlin writes, imagine if we let people pick their governing state with respect to taxes instead of insurance. I could, for example, opt to pay South Dakota dirt cheap tax rates while still living and using roads and police in a high tax New York City. Now, or New York State. Now, why would New York stand for that? Why should it? Under our Constitution, state sovereignty isn't a suggestion, it's a law. And here's the problem. You're buying insurance. This is not a tax, right? That's like saying, well, I can't order something on eBay. I can't buy something from China because I don't live in China. Now I'm all for supporting local businesses and everything, but there's certain products and everything I'm going to get wherever I can get it. And wherever is the cheapest, it's going to be best for everybody. What McLaughlin says is, the problem is that taxation exists to benefit the state and to finance the services that it provides to its citizens. It's for that reason that New York has plenary power to require New Yorkers to fork over a portion of their income or property to support our government. It is also for that reason the Constitution denies New York the power to tax people and business activities outside its borders and require that taxes be fairly apportioned to the taxpayers present and presence and conduct in the state. Other states will tax who and what appears within their own borders. If New York taxpayers are allowed to pay South Dakota, New York cannot retaliate by taxing South Dakotans. Voluntary health insurance transactions are for the benefit of the insured, not the state. That's the big difference.
Yeah.
So New York suffers no injury to its sovereign power if I buy an insurance policy offered in Delaware, any more than if I order a computer manufactured in Texas. Indeed, if you assume that insurance is commerce, New York would be prohibited under the Dormant Commerce Clause on grounds of discrimination against interstate commerce from barring me from buying an out-of-state insurance policy were it not for the fact that Congress and the McCarran-Ferguson Act of 1945 specifically permitted individual states to have exclusive control over the regulation of the health insurance business within their borders. A statute passed in response to a Supreme Court decision that had permitted insurers to be subject to federal antitrust laws. So changing any of that remains within Congress's power. So taxes are for the state. Insurance is for the individual.
Yes.
Except now they've mandated. And I just want to organically see where this goes.
Yeah.
So, but Obama has now mandated it, right? And the Supreme Court held it, you know, said this is fine and held it up based on the idea of it being a tax. But you're taxing a service that you're buying. I mean, this, I can't bring this circle together in my brain. Oh, God, I broke it. I'm sorry, folks. He's rebooting. Hold on.
Well, I'm trying to...
I know. I've given you a lot to digest.
Yeah, yeah. Where's the breakdown? I mean, is it that Obama, the ACA, are we wanting to treat it as a tax in some sense of the word and a product in another sense of the word? I mean, where's the breakdown in your mind?
Okay. Let's take the gas tax. Mm-hmm. The gas tax is specifically to use the roads, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
But the roads cross public land. So I think there's a little eminent domain kind of thing going on there. You're using public land to traverse from one place to another.
Mm-hmm.
The tax does nothing to my driveway. That's my
yeah.
problem,
yep.
right?
Yep.
So, but health insurance, that's me. That's my individual problem. I buy health insurance. You're forcing a tax on me that I have to pay,
yes.
pay for health insurance. So what you're saying is, well, because other people don't pay, you're going to help flip the bill for that. And I think that's where they say it's okay that it's a tax. But that's not what the law makes you do. It's fundamentally contradictory is what I see. And I don't understand how the Supreme Court made this happen, and I'm still pissed at Roberts for letting it go. So, obviously, I think it needs to be repealed on constitutional grounds.
Well, by all definitions, we have an act, the ACA, which basically says that just as you described, we're footing the bill for those who can't pay.
Correct.
And fundamentally, that amount of money that I'm paying into the system is a tax. I mean, that's just fundamentally, that's what it is.
But if I buy my health insurance, that doesn't go into the state pool. That goes to the insurance company, doesn't
right.
it?
Yeah.
So how does any of that money help? Well, it's the raise in premiums and the extra tax that they're putting on the insurance companies. And I'm guessing that's going to... Any way you look at it, it's forced upon people. And, you know, you'd say, well, they force you to buy auto insurance. Yeah, but you're using public roads. And you don't have to buy auto insurance to protect your car. You have to buy auto insurance to protect other people. If you screw it into a baby carriage, not yeah. that that's ever happened to me.
Right.
Because I got that expunged. The... I got... I look, You got to buy it to protect other people.
Yes.
I get that. You do not have to buy it to protect your own car.
Yeah.
They're saying I have to buy health insurance to protect me, my own car.
Yes.
My body.
Yeah.
And that's not a tax. Right? And then you can say,
but that's not where it stops, right?
I mean, of course it doesn't.
Yeah. If that was the sum total of the ACA, then I think it would be a bitter pill to swallow, but people would understand at least the rationale behind it. But that's not where we're going with it. We have to, as a complete society, pay for everything for in the healthcare system for all people. So it gets back to the idea that personal responsibility no longer resides with the individual, it resides with the collective. And if that sounds a little socialist, it's exactly what it is.
Well, that's the problem, is that the collective style of a society always breaks down, it always fails. It can't create, it can't do the things that a free society can do. And I don't know why the left cannot learn this bit of history. I go back to the childish mentality. I mean, I really, he goes, somebody take care of me, take care of me.
Right.
I don't want to do it on my own. It's hard.
But and let's talk about if the ACA isn't the right way to approach the problem. The problem being there is a cost, a rising cost to healthcare. What should be the proper approach to addressing the ever increasing cost?
Why is it increasing?
Why? Let's talk about why is it increasing.
Why is it increasing? You know, they act like it's been a free-for-all all this time. That it hasn't been one of the most heavily regulated, fucked-up messes that the government made. You know, the malpractice suits that were a mess. The HMO thing that they created. I remember when they created those back, you know, because they screwed around with it and it got worse. You used to be able to go to a family doctor and everything and just pay out of pocket.
Right.
You know, the idea that you don't even have people even considering that they would just pay out of pocket. I have to have health insurance. Do you? Do you necessarily have to have health insurance? If it was a competitive market, and this is just something people balk at. It's like a competitive market for health care? You want profit in health care? Fuck yes, I want profit in health care. Absolutely, I want profit in healthcare. Let me ask you something. Look at elective stuff. LASIK, dental work, you name it, right? All of this stuff has gotten cheaper, better, more affordable, safer. Why? Because all the doctors and everybody are competing. Now, this is still healthcare, isn't it?
Right, yeah. Oh, of course.
This is still, you know, diving in and getting surgery while people say, well, that's not stuff you really need. That's stuff, you're getting, you know, but you don't really need that. It's not life-threatening. Okay. Well, you need food.
Yeah, yeah.
And food is at a free market, and it's cheap and plentiful. How cheap and plentiful is food? Our biggest problem in America, one of our biggest problems in America, is that people are too fucking fat.
Yeah, and I think you're getting to maybe some of the preventative issues that are being ignored. It's let's try to figure out and rig the system and create an economy behind the problem to try to fix it when folks are already over the edge of, hey, I've kind of screwed myself because I'm fat and I've got diabetes and. I'm just in poor health.
What do you mean by preventive? Like preventive care?
Well, I could stand to lose about 20 to 30 pounds.
Ah, well.
I'm not in great shape. But at the same time, I don't weigh 300 pounds. I don't have diabetes. I don't have a huge risk of heart problems because of my lifestyle choices. And it gets back to the idea that you're free to make the choices that you want to make.
Yeah, but
and if you become unhealthy,
True, but that's not my point.
Right. Well,
my point is
one of my points was one of the factors of the rising costs of healthcare are the barriers that have been put in place by the federal government.
True.
And the system, but also by people's own choices, not to live a somewhat healthy lifestyle. So I think it's a multifaceted problem that would need to be approached from both ends.
Okay, well, let's take out for a second the people's choices.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
What my point was is that, and you can argue whether how good or bad the food industry is, but the point is, if you want to eat healthy, you can do it for a very reasonable cost.
Yep.
Okay? You want to eat whatever you want. There's more food out there. Nobody's going hungry in this country unless they want to. I mean, it is so difficult to starve in this country. We had to make up a disease to starve in this country called anorexia and bulimia. We had to do it to ourselves on purpose. That's where we are. That's how the capitalist system provided more food than anybody could. And look at the countries that are not capitalist free market systems. They don't have any food. And free trade and all that makes that work. You think England has a ton of farmland? No. They're eating just fine. So the capitalist system produces a bounty. Now, you could argue whether or not the food is the quality of the food and all that stuff. But the truth is there's a wide variety out there. It's up to you to decide. You know, the information is out there. There's nothing that's preventing anybody from finding out whether food is good or food is bad or anything like that. And I'm not going to listen to how the magic food industry with their magic commercials managed to, you know, cloud people's brains and all this other bullshit. It's your responsibility to go find the right food.
Sure.
I know exactly what I'm eating and what I shouldn't be eating and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That's not my point. My point is that free market system provided a very bountiful food and we need food to survive.
Yeah.
So my question is, why can't we have that same system for healthcare? Why is that just, that's just crazy talk. Do you not think that a free market system would provide, would eventually come up with the same kind of low cost, good quality, all kinds of different choices? Sure. And yes, when you're trying to save people's lives, there probably has to be some different regulations on this sort of thing. But that's already in place for the elective stuff, isn't it? It seems to be working. I don't hear about people dying in droves on the plastic surgery tables. So my point is there needs to be more of a free market system in the healthcare. There needs to be more profit in the healthcare system, and there isn't. And that's why aspirin costs $8 a pill, because the economics of it are so screwed up. Because of things like insurance. Insurance adds so much stacks of regulations and crap onto just doing something very simple that it makes it more expensive. If you wanted to pay out of pocket for something, you could negotiate it down really cheap, comparatively speaking.
Right.
Insurance company.
And that makes sense.
Boom. I've left him speechless.
But it does. It does make sense. It goes back to the fundamental problem. You've got so many regulations. You have so much overhead, and in the end, you've got reams and reams of regulations, and you have thousands and thousands of people that work to make sure that those regulations are followed and that the rules are followed, and the complex system of the insurance industry works the way that the government says it's got to work this way, that, yeah, when I do go into urgent care, or heaven forbid something bad happens, I've got to go to the hospital, or if I just have to go to the doctor, the cost of the fundamental process has exploded.
Well, and it, you know, we already had piles and piles of regulations before Obamacare. That's why it was broken in the first place. And so what was the answer? Another 20,000 pages of crap.
Right. Instead of going backwards to a time when we didn't have the burdens, let's put more burden on the system.
And why did that happen? Because we have a populace. We have a mindset. Even among just the normal people. Just people are not ideological.
We're gonna piss so many people off of this conversation.
I don't care. We got a mindset of people out there that just think the government, their first instinct is the government needs to do something. The government needs to fix it. The government is what fucking broke it in the first place.
Yeah.
And that's what people do not understand. Well, many do. We've got a whole legion of people on our end that are doing that. But I'm hearing that millennials are starting to develop a healthy distrust of government and its ability. It's not so much I don't distrust the government as far as I think they're evil, they're like Spectre, James Bond fighting Spectre. I don't think they're trying to take over the world or do a bunch of things that are, just mustache twirling evil. I just think they're a bunch of incompetence. I think they're a bunch of well-meaning people who want to do good and who have an arrogant streak that's running through them that think that they know better than everybody else. They, I, Mr. Senator in Washington, know better about regulating a gas station than the guy that actually owns the fucking gas station. And their results, their ability to deliver results, well, it hasn't exactly been stellar for the past, since the history of civilization.
Right.
And millennials are starting to wake up to this, though. And it's not so much that they have a healthy distrust of government, like the government is a bunch of shadowy, horrible organizations. It's most of a distrust. It's like, you guys are a bunch of retards. You're a bunch of window lickers.
Well, and after... after so many attempts to say, hey, we're going to solve this problem, and the problem never gets solved.
Yeah.
You at some point you're going to say, you guys just don't know what you're doing.
Well, Apple says we're going to deliver a phone that will revolutionize, and they deliver a phone that will revolutionize.
Yeah.
And many companies, when they would deliver a product that says what it's going to do, it does what it says it's going to do. And for some reason, they're evil, and the government is full of angels, and it's ridiculous.
And
they don't know what they're doing. It's the incompetency that's starting to get to me.
Well, and
starting.
the sad fact is that there are people out there who are in need. Look. We have a variety of skills and a variety of talents and a variety. I mean, there's the spectrum of ability that people have is pretty wide. I'm not a genius. I'm not a super genius. I can't do.
I am.
Well, I know you are, but I can't do trigonometric equations in my head without sitting down with a piece of paper and a pencil and working it out.
Yeah, pencil, you pussy.
Yeah, I know. But that's what I'm saying. There are folks out there. Look, the world needs ditch diggers, and
it's sad when we're actually quoting Tim Knight in Caddyshack.
Right. Yes. Yeah. but the point being,
you grow up at some point.
If you're a bricklayer, God bless you. You know what? If that's what you do, and you make a good living at that, and you work 8 hours a day and you put in your time, I mean, there are lots of people that want that opportunity.
Yeah.
And so these folks of all stripes and all economic levels need to be able to say, hey, I just want to have some insurance. Yeah. I just want to be able to go to the grocery store and, buy food that I like, and
I want to be left alone.
I want to be left alone, and
and the government won't stop.
Yeah.
Screwing my life.
And the government does things like convince people that, you know what, you can't have insurance because the system is rigged. Well, who rigged the system?
And we've come full circle.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, we could go on and on about this.
Yeah.
But I don't want to.
No. No.
It's time to get to the entertainment portion of the podcast. Because none of this has been entertaining. I think everybody just fast forwards to the movies. That's my guess. So you're going to kill us. You know that? We're going to die. We're behind a giant John Deere farm equipment, a tiller or something, and he wants to get around. He can't see, and cars keep zooming by us, and I'm sure we're going to die. So if we die screaming and it ends up on the blog, it's very interesting. I'll let you figure out how it happened.
Yeah. I promise not to kill us.
Thank you. Today. Today. That would be nice. So
now that we have this extra time being stuck behind this big piece of farm equipment.
Looks like this is going to be another double-sized podcast since we're going 10 miles an hour.
Hey, did you see any movies over the weekend?
I'm glad you asked.
I want to talk to somebody in charge.
You are not fooling anybody when you say that what happened was a natural disaster.
You're lying.
It was not an earthquake. It wasn't a typhoon.
Because what's really happening is... And it is going to send us back to the Stone Age!
So, which one would you like me to rant about first?
Well, I'm interested in the Godzilla experience. Godzilla. Mainly because it seems like such a rich opportunity to make an interesting story, and with a 700-foot character.
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
Something like that.
Yeah. So this gigantic beast of a character, and if you've seen any of the hokey '60s movies where you got a big guy in a suit stomping on the buildings, it's kind of funny in a comical, cheesy way. But that, as children, that only serves to maybe add fuel to the fires. This is an interesting story. Why can't we make a good Godzilla movie?
I don't recall that I was. When I was a kid, I was thinking, boy, this is an interesting story. I think I was thinking...
No.
Godzilla Stomp City!
Yeah, so when you're a kid, the whole idea is...
It's a power trip.
This is cool. There's this big, scaly monster, and he's crushing cities. Isn't that cool? So, and looking back in the shows...
Are we any different now?
Well,
I don't think we are.
maybe we've
grown up at all.
But as a kid, you know, it's campy, it's cheesy, and now you look back and you have kind of maybe fond memories of, oh yeah, wasn't that fun?
Yes.
And so now you've got fertile ground to do a reboot and throw out a movie that rekindles people's interest in something that they're familiar with. And you have a chance to redo it. We talked this morning on the drive-in about James Bond. So you've got lots of James Bond from the 60s and 70s and 80s and even 90s, and where some of them are kind of campy and some of them are kind of quirky in their presentation. And now you've got the Daniel Craig versions, which take those memories that we had.
They Nolanized it.
And they've created, the character is established, and now you've got a version that is compelling and interesting, and they put it in what you called this morning a Bourne identity type of thriller action. And it's like, wow, that's perfect. That works. Why can't we do that same sort of thing with Godzilla?
Well,
and I've already jumped to the conclusion that it sucks, But tell me, does the new Godzilla suck? The last Godzilla sucked.
Yes. Now on to X-Men.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Let me tell you my story here, which I tell you and the audience my story. My wife and I went to the Boulevard Drive-In in Merriam, Kansas, which is this drive-in that has not changed since 1953, except for they will broadcast it on an FM frequency into your car. They still have the speakers on the posts, and in fact, it was so old that when they got to the, it was a double feature, so I saw X-Men Days of Future Past first, and then I saw Godzilla, and I use the term saw loosely. The in between, they had the cartoon. You saw Grease, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay, do you remember in Grease when they went to the drive-in and he's swinging on the swing, and you can see behind him the cartoon of them going back and forth, the snacks and the ice cream and all that. It's that same one. And, I mean, I'm like, holy shit, that exists? I didn't know that was actually real. This drive-in still uses that. So, I mean, this place is a throwback like you wouldn't believe. And I liked it. It was kind of charming. But we should have gotten there earlier, and we should have gotten a better parking space. So the screen was pretty damn dark, and I could not tell during Godzilla, which, as far as I could tell, was filmed all at night. There was very few daylight scenes in there. And all the monster scenes, I couldn't tell what the fuck was going on. I had no clue what was going on. So, X-Men, I could see more, but it still had a lot of dark scenes as well. So if you're going to have, if I can't see what's going on in the movie, then the plot and the dialogue and all that had better carry me along. X-Men did. Godzilla was boring as fuck. I mean, Kick-Ass was the guy that starred in it. If you've watched the trailers, you may have the mistaken impression that Heisenberg stars in this. You are wrong. He is... I'm going to spoil. This is spoiling. Spoilers! He is killed about a third of the way in. I saw no reason to kill him. I would have rather they killed the son and let Heisenberg go running around the rest of the movie, because Bryan Cranston is awesome. I like him a lot.
Yeah.
I remember him in Malcolm in the Middle. He was okay, but I really liked him in From the Earth to the Moon. It's a miniseries that HBO did many, many years ago.
Don't remember that one.
It's fantastic. It's a Tom Hanks produced it. It came out right after he did. It came out in 1998, so this was right after he had done Apollo 13. Exactly.
You know what? I take that back. I do remember that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Bryan Cranston played Buzz Aldrin in it, and he was very good. And then he's doing Malcolm in the Middle, and he's that. And
unfortunately, he was in the new Total Recall, but...
Was he?
Yeah.
I didn't see it.
He was the bad guy.
He was the bad guy in the new Total Recall.
Yeah.
I don't recall that. Thank you.
It's a crappy movie.
Well, that's why I don't recall Total Recall.
But he had nothing to do with the crappiness.
He elevated it to mild crappiness.
Yeah.
That's just it. He elevated everything that was in Godzilla. He elevated everything where he was in it. And the rest of the movie, if you've seen Kick-Ass, I liked the guy in Kick-Ass. I thought he did an okay job.
Mm-hmm.
He was a total flatline in this movie. Just a total fucking flatline. Just dull and boring as fuck. And I couldn't care less about what's going on. And then, on top of that, everything is like he ends up. Everything's a coincidence. He ends up on a train, and some little kid got on the train, but then the door's shut. And his parents are outside, and he says, "Well, I'll bring him back to you." And so he stays with the little kid, and of course, the train ends up in the path of Muto or Godzilla or again, I couldn't tell what the hell was going on, and it's just a lot of little coincidences like that. And then, from what I could tell, they were going to nuke them, and the Mudos took the bombs because they wanted to suck the radiation out of them or something. That's how they ate, I guess. The Mudos were the bad monsters. Godzilla was the good monster. And you come to find out that Godzilla is there to balance nature, defend humanity, or stop the big... I don't know. Maybe he's just a predator. I don't know.
I thought he was there just to knock down buildings.
Which he did. Or I guess one fell on him and took him out. I kept waiting for him to breathe fire. He brings that out last. I'm thinking, you should have led with that, buddy. This movie would have been over a half hour ago, and I could have gone home. But no, he's got to wait till the very, very end to start, you know, breathing the fire.
So you were bored.
I was bored. I probably would have enjoyed it more if I could have experienced the full spectacle of the monster fights. And I think that's a it's a hell of a way to spend $20, but that's a mark of a good movie. If you can't tell what the fuck is going on some of the time and you're still enthralled, like I was with X-Men Days of Future Past, you got something there. But when you can't see all the money shots and you realize the rest of this movie is a horrible, boring flatline, the best times, the clearest I could ever make out the monsters is when they were showing a scene when somebody was watching them on TV. Then it was clear as a bell, you know? But when it actually filled the screen, no fucking clue what's going on. And that's not the movie's fault. That is me sitting way too far back in a drive-in. So I don't want to blame the movie for not being able to see anything, what was going on in the movie. I'm sure it wasn't like that in a regular theater.
Okay.
What my point is that since I couldn't, then I'm having to deal with the rest of the movie, and it was a boring, dull, I could care less about it. You know, you kill the one character at any motivation or any emotion or any acting ability. And, I mean, I like Ken Watanabe. Ken Guantanamo Bay.
Yes.
He's a great actor, but he was saddled with basically just being exposition guy.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah.
That seems like a waste of a very good talent.
It was. And you know, even when it came to a moment where he's supposed to say, you know, let him fight. Let Godzilla fight. It's supposed to be a big moment. And he just delivers it like, oh, let him fight. What? I'm sorry? Did he say something? Was that a climax? I think that was a climax. Was that the climax? Fuck, I missed it.
Maybe he was suffering from low T.
And that takes us to our new sponsor.
This is the Viagra Cialis,
yes,
portion of our show.
You get the feeling we're middle-aged men?
I just get tired of hearing the commercials.
It does get old.
And we talked a little bit about this morning. Why all of a sudden are we worried about low T? I don't remember my dad or my grandfather talking about these issues.
Well, and we said that, you know, men have become pussies in this day and age.
I guess
maybe that's a cause.
That's where.
Or maybe that's a symptom.
Yes, the wussification of America.
The wussification of men who can't, you know, there are a bunch of pussies out there and a bunch of guys who never move out of the house and never want to get jobs and never want to be men. And we have low T. I think there's a correlation.
I think, yeah, you might be onto something.
So congratulations, capitalism, for finding a market.
This part of the program is brought to you by Insight.
It's so wrong. So, anyway, yeah. What were we talking about? Fuck.
Ken Watanabe and his low-key...
Oh, yeah, Ken Guantanamo Bay. All yes. Right. So... Yeah, he was exposition, and I'm sure the monster fights were awesome, but the movie itself was terrible.
But that really says a lot about the movie when you have the Mel Gibson freedom speech moment, which every movie seems to need these days, and you even fall flat on that. I mean, I just got done watching, we were talking about Game of Thrones yesterday, and last night I got through, I'm in season two. So
let me back you up here. I want everybody to know he's listened to the two books. He's done audio for the two books.
Yes, on audio.
And he couldn't hold it back anymore. And he went out and he bought HBO, and now he's shotgunning the shows. He came in the car this morning looking like he was on heroin. I'm like, you've been watching Game of Thrones, haven't you?
He's I've been up for 36 hours while watching all the Game of Thrones.
He's mainlining Game of Thrones. it's a drug.
But when you've got an HBO production where you've got the Tyrion Lannister character played by an amazing actor, Peter Dinklage, who gives that same, you know, speech, that moment where you've got to give the speech and rally the troops and inspire the troops. And this is just an HBO produced, very well produced, but we're not talking big screen production. All it takes is good writing and great acting to get that moment right. And when you throw as much money into a big budget production like the Godzilla movie, I would expect you to get that moment right.
I'm going to assume they got the monster fights right, because that's what I'm hearing. They got nothing else right, as far as I can tell. I want to be fair. Okay.
Yeah. Sure.
This was not stupid. Okay. It wasn't Godzilla 98.
Yeah.
It was not completely stupid and ridiculous and full of, and Godzilla wasn't changing sizes.
Yeah.
And all the other stuff. It just was boring.
I want a good Godzilla movie.
Well, yeah.
Damn it.
You haven't got it yet. Go back to Toho Productions.
I guess so. I want a good Godzilla movie.
What about Godzilla 1985? I hear it was stellar.
Sure. Whatever.
Or Godzilla 2000. There was a... You know what I can say? At least nobody needed Godzilla's blood to cure cancer.
There was no magic Godzilla blood?
There was no magic Godzilla blood that we had to deal with.
To bring people back to life.
Thank God for that shit. You know, even the Pacific Rim. Remember? The blue blood would fuck things up cure cancer or, you know, grow corn. It was everywhere. Every movie has something to do with magic blood. I don't know if it's the vampire craze or what. I am so tired of it.
I think Pacific Rim it would cure low T.
are you suffering from floppy dick? Well, we have gaiju blood. Son of a bitch, I think you're right. That was in there. Remember, this guy was selling all that stuff, and he said one of it was it was an aphrodisiac.
You thought I was joking.
I thought you were joking, and holy shit, it just came back to me. Oh God, that was just terrible. Not the movie. Pacific Rim was wonderful.
Yeah,
terrible.
Yeah,
yeah. So anyway, my review of Godzilla is basically go see X-Men.
Okay. On it. Yeah, I'm on it.
And here's my review of X-Men, and it's more fun to talk about movies I didn't like because you can tear the shit out of them. It's hard to talk about movies that you really love. First of all, I don't want to spoil it for you. The audience, fuck the audience. Yeah. But you, I don't want to spoil it for.
Considering I'm the one driving.
Yeah, all you guys could do is put nasty comments. He's actually driving the car, could kill me. But... this is my review of X-Men. When you can make a movie that's very, very entertaining, and you enjoy it, and you're carried along, and then with icing on the cake, you can erase the stink of X-Men 3. That's amazing. And I think he erased Origins, too.
Oh, well.
Well, quite frankly, I think he may have erased the entire fucking franchise. But you know what? That's okay. X2 is not exactly holding up these days. and X-Men 1 is fine. I don't want to take anything away from those two movies.
Yeah.
But, you know, after you see Days of Future Past, you realize they've opened up a whole new thing. It's much better. They fixed the fuck-ups. And I do have a problem with them using time travel as a reset button. But in this case, given the stink and the crap and the fetid pile of rat nerd turds that was left over, this is, it was worth it.
Yeah.
And it worked. Yeah. It was earned. Mm-hmm. It was earned. And I thought it was fantastic.
Now, the trick will be not pulling a Star Trek stunt where the time travel reboots, but then their next attempt is a steaming pile. Because then you've just reintroduced more stink.
Well, they're doing the Apocalypse storyline. There's a mutant called Apocalypse around ancient Egypt or something, and he has this whole Four Horsemen storyline that happened in the 80s, which I think actually, because I think they're doing the X-Men First Class storyline, so it's going to go through to the 80s.
Okay.
So the next one's going to be... So I find that it's funny that it's coming full circle here. But... yeah, we'll see. They certainly have the door wide open for whatever they want. And that I really appreciate. So, time to wrap it up. We're pulling into the driveway. Jim, I had fun.
Yeah. Another good conversation.
They always are.
Yeah.
I think they always are. Now, if we could get the rest of the internet to get on board with this, I think we'll be in good shape. So, thank you for listening, and we'll see you again next week.